Okay, I'd like to call this meeting to order for the Stansbury Park Improvement District Board Meeting held on March 17th, 2026 at 4:01 PM at the Stansbury Park Office, 30 Plaza. Board members present are me, Jacob Clegg, Brian Mansell, and Judy Desmond. We also have our district manager, Brett Palmer, our district engineer, Brendan Thorpe, and Cammy Thorpe taking our meeting minutes. The first item on the agenda is to review and possibly approve for Utah Retirement System 401K and 457B employer-employee matching contributions.
In the board package, the breakdown that was provided, it looks like today they provided a little bit more information on this spreadsheet that's handed to you, so I don't know if you want to have any discussion or talk about it or get more information or what you would like to do.
So I stopped by the office earlier and kind of talked to him about it, and I kind of like the idea of letting them have. They said that the percentages their system doesn't do right now, so it'd be easier to do dollar amounts. And then I kind of like the years of service, depending on the amount that we matched them with. Like the 1 to 2 years, you'd match 25, 3 to 4, 50, and 5 to 6, 75. I feel like the employees kind of deserve a little bit of retirement. So that's my thoughts anyway. Okay.
Thank you.
This is different than what's in the board books, but I like this approach better. I wanted to make sure I understood the URS statement in here. They give a short version. So the district pays the amounts that it shows into the URS based on the tier 1 and tier 2. And then this says the employee benefit at retirement tier 1 is only 2% of 3-year highest wages and service years.
Yeah, so the retirement is based on your retirement that you receive is based on the last 3 years
of your highest.
Is that the average
salary
of 3 years? Or how does that calculation?
I think it must be average.
Yeah, I think it's an average. When I talked to them, they said that the money up at the top of, I can't find that paper, the money up at the top of, if you think of it as it's going into a pool, mm-hmm. and then when they retire, they average their last everything and they pull from that pool and give it to them. So this would be...
That's an addition to...
Yeah,
this is an addition to what we're already contributing
with
the URS.
Yeah.
No, but we're contributing too.
Yeah.
As a district.
Right.
So they already have a retirement. This is an addition to that.
Right.
I guess I just don't understand the 2%. Is it... essentially 2% of their normal wage.
The 2% doesn't really affect what the district is putting into it.
No, right. I'm just trying to understand what the retirement benefit looks like
for them. What amount is what you're really looking at? Because that is a little bit confusing. 1% of that would be like nothing. That's what your question is.
Like, is it multiplied by the number of years, or how is the? I guess I'm trying to get a sense of how much or how little the retirement looks like currently through URS.
Okay, I can get you that information. To me, it sounds like if you make $100 a year, your retirement, if that's what your average is over your period, then your retirement benefit is about 2% of that amount. That's what I think it says, but I'll
just be like
clarify
5%
that.
Total.
Mm-hmm.
with that said, I support this approach because I think, one, it gives a way to make us more competitive in getting, I guess, younger, newer employees as people near retirement, and also this sort of promotes retention for longevity by increasing that percentage as they stay.
I agree.
Not percentage, but dollar amount. This would be per pay period. There's 26 pay periods.
Mm-hmm. Annual cost, if we went with the third option, would be just under $20,000 a year.
I wasn't here in December for the budget. How does that fit into the budget?
I don't.
It's a good question.
It's not budgeted.
Yeah, it's not budgeted. Our budgets are generally heavily weighed on projects that don't seem to have enough time to get them done.
So one thought that I appreciate the board members' thoughts on this. I don't disagree. One concern that I have is about this time last year, we raised water rates and sewer rates.
Just water rates.
Just water rates. We're about to raise our sewer rates again. Really, any time. I feel like the URS system is pretty good. I look at it compared to what I get, and it's better than what I get in my company. Not that this isn't a good thing and wouldn't be, back to your point, Brian, a benefit to the employees here and potentially be appealing to somebody coming to work for the district. So I'm trying to keep those things in mind, but on the flip side, I have a hard time going, okay, is it really something we have to do right now as we're raising rates to, and back to the raising rates, they hadn't been raised since 2010. So it was 15 years since the rate increase. And I don't know if you guys, I get asked all the time, well, why did we get our rates raised? Are we not spending our money wisely? Well, milk's not the same as it was in 2010. Neither is gas, neither is the car, neither is our mortgage. I mean, all those things change, and we hadn't changed, but I don't know. I want to do what's good for the employees, but I also want to make sure that I'm considering everything else we've been going through. And I look at the number and go, it's not going to kill us. It's not that. It's not a huge dollar amount. It's not hundreds of thousands of dollars every year. But over the course of 15 or 20 years, it does equal hundreds of thousands of dollars. But it could be very beneficial to the employees here. So I don't, that's not really an answer. I don't know whether I'm for or against it. I'm kind of on the fence going, I get why it's appealing. I get why it's good for the staff. But on the other side, I can't help but go, is it something we should do at this moment? Or should we be looking at towards the budget where we're sitting overall, looking at what the rates are going to be? I think we've been very competitive in what we've been paying the staff every year with matching COLA. Mm-hmm. And the vacation time that they have, along with the sick leave, along with holidays that we approved. How many paid holidays did
13.
They get now? 13? I get like 8. So it's not...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess I've just gotten the impression that we've struggled to hire younger people. So I'm sort of seeing this, I mean, looking at the current years of service, we have a lot of
I think if we ask Brett who's falling in the 3 to 4 and the 5 to 6, that one of those is going to be admin staff that's in the office, and the other one's going to be one guy that, and everybody else is out in the field already. Everybody that's 7+ years, most of them have been here for 7+ years, right?
Mike's not in that because he's retired.
Okay, so he doesn't.
He doesn't count in this. So then there would be one employee that's been here for 4 years that's out in the field.
Out in the field.
The rest have been here for five, at least probably, yeah, 7 or more.
And more. So I mean, to your point, yes, we have, but we also haven't put it out that much either.
Yeah. But how many employees do we have that are within 10 years of retiring?
Marilyn retires end of this year,
mm-hmm.
and you're within 3 years.
Yep.
That's it, right?
I believe so. Mike might be gone, but he's not in.
But he's not on this. Because he came from police.
How long, you mentioned Colton was a long timer, right?
Yeah, and I honestly don't know how old Colton is.
I think you mentioned he's been here though.
He was hired in 97. 46. I think he was hired in 97.
44.
Probably pretty close.
Okay. I mean, we could, if you wanted to revisit it, good. Because
he's
we don't.
52.
Because we don't have it. In the budget this year, we could look at it at the end of this year if you wanted and include it. If you wanted to spend some time to think about it, put it into discuss it for next year's budget rather than trying to go in March and approve something that wasn't in the budget.
I think that's the prudent path forward.
Yeah.
I do like it because my mentality is employees are not where you should cut costs.
Yeah,
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And I just, I guess I, and maybe I got the wrong impression, but I had the sense that we have a lot of people that have been here a long time. We have a lot of institutional knowledge, and not the people backfilling to pass that on to really have some continuity. And some of that, there might be a lot of different factors, I'm sure there are, but some of that might just be like being a little bit more competitive with other, you know, similar sized districts.
Yeah, where I came from, where I retired from, they matched, and it was helpful, but I guess that's why.
Did you have URS also? You had both?
It was URS is who we had the whole thing through with URS.
Okay.
And we matched it through URS. But it was a percentage, but they matched a percentage of what we wanted
what
to
you
put
imagine.
In.
Okay.
What we put in, they matched a percentage. So, and it was, I like Brian says, I think you get better employees and you get better work out of them when you treat them. When they have a reason to.
Sure.
You know, that's my thoughts. But.
So, question is, are we going to, you guys want to vote on it now, or you want to table it and vote on it and put it in the budget?
Well, if we don't have it in the budget, then it doesn't make sense to.
Table it until the next budget cycle and make a decision.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Judy?
Oh, it's aye.
Okay.
Sorry.
Did you get that, Kim?
Okay, next item on the agenda is review and approval of the 2025 Municipal Wastewater Planning Program Survey.
It was quite lengthy. It's a report that we have to fill out annually. It talks about the financial part of our system, our operation and maintenance, discusses impact fees, and it's required that the board review it and approve it formally. And so with that, have you had a chance to look through it, or do you want to kind of go through it? Maybe not page by page, but just give you some general ideas. And how would you like to?
Anything specific either would you wanted to go over?
I tried to go over it. It was over my head. So if there's specifics that you could explain to me, I would love to.
It's really a planning document for the board and for our entity to kind of see where we're at overall in planning. Generally, pipes have a 50-year lifespan, plus or minus. In 1970-ish, when they put a lot of the concrete sewer pipe in, because of hydrogen sulfide gas that's in the sewer system, it tends to erode the concrete and expose the aggregate. And if it gets bad enough, it'll actually just disintegrate, and then dirt will start falling in. And so in order to do operation and maintenance, we haven't done it the last 2 years because finances have been tight. But prior to 2 years ago, we started up in the country club area, and we did what they call slip lining. And it can be a fiberglass or it can be a plastic membrane that adheres to the inside diameter of the pipe and basically creates a new pipe.
Okay.
And so we're probably going to start instituting that next year again to try to keep up with our maintenance on the sewer system. So that's one thing. And it talks about how often are you replacing your infrastructure. One of the questions is, what would it cost to replace 45 miles of sewer pipe? That's what we have. And that's $114 million. Obviously, that's not going to have to take place all at once, but they want us to know that information. There's questions in here that talks about our finances, how much money is going towards sewer operation and maintenance, just kind of like I talked about. When was the last time our sewer treatment? So they're talking about collection and treatment. So they're talking about, they want to know information. Well, the questions are geared around the board that our district understands kind of where we're at, both financially, operation and maintenance-wise, and capital improvement project-wise. And they try to capture that all in this document.
Okay.
So in here, we talked about our 10-year planning period. We're just in the middle of adopting our treatment impact fee. We're in that process right now. And our collection impact fee. And those projects identify 10-year planning period that we can collect fees for. And then it also plans for years 15 and 20 years plus, right? And kind of gives us a forecast of what we're looking at in the future. So that's kind of the gist of what this document is.
Went through it. I'm familiar with them because we have to do one with MI work as well. And I was looking at the data up front for the head of the document. The only thing that confused me was it says influent effluent, but I can't quite tell. I don't think I'm seeing any effluent. value for VOD or TSS. Those look like infield values.
In this chart here?
Mm-hmm. Well, in those three pages.
What section is it that you're looking at? Maybe I can pull it up. It probably is only influent data.
Because it's looking at our community.
Okay,
I was just curious.
We don't really have any effluent though, do we?
We discharge, and so that would be our effluent.
Right.
Well, we're discharging 8 months out of the year.
Oh, okay. But it doesn't make it to the Great Salt Lake. Okay, that's what I'm thinking of.
Okay.
Talks about a repair and replace sinking fund.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking that I don't know exactly what that is.
Money set aside for repair and replacement. We don't necessarily have, we budget money out of our normal operation and maintenance. It's not like we have, in our budget, we don't have a light item that says we're going to set aside every year $200,000 and put it in a separate account for this specific. We just budget the money for it.
I mean, based on the questions, it seems like they're implying that that's a good idea to have a sinking fund to meet the anticipated needs. But I, not being a finance person, I don't know if that really gives us much advantage or not.
As a board, if that's something that you would like to do, we can definitely set that aside and make that happen.
At least on this one, it says describing the asset management system. It looks like nothing's checked.
We don't have one.
Okay. The 10,000 population, is that current? I was thinking it was more like 12 or 13.
There are numbers anywhere from 9 to 13 to whatever, and I just picked 10.
It's probably closer to 5,000 ERUs times 3.25 or something in that range. We have about 4,000 connections, 5,000.
4,500.
4,500 times 3. So it's probably more on the order of around 13 to 15,000.
That's what I was thinking. On the rehab, the slip lining, what method have we been using?
Cast in place, ultraviolet light cured.
Oh, yeah, okay. CIP.
CIP. Yep.
That's been working pretty well for us, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
When we are putting in new sewer pipe, are we putting in concrete still?
PVC SDR 35.
You haven't used, I mean, the only place that the clay exists is in that old part of Stansbury, right?
Mm-hmm.
Off the top of your head, how much of that's been replaced? I know for the first few years we were boom, boom, every year hitting a certain percentage of it, trying to.
Probably 4,000-ish feet, okay. Maybe 6,000 max.
Has been done. How much of it's in the clay pipe?
So we have, so it's concrete pipe, but there's on the old, in Country Club and Lakeview, they have clay laterals.
Oh, when you touch them, they disintegrate.
Yeah. But as far as the concrete, so we're responsible for the main lane.
Not laterals.
And so, yeah, we don't have any clay main.
Okay, but the concrete only exists in the main.
In Country Club.
In Country Club.
And Lakeview.
In Lakeview.
Yeah. And
of that, how much of, you said we have
we have about 20 miles of it.
Okay, so about half of our miles is done in the concrete pipe.
Yeah.
Because you said, you rattled off that we have 45 miles-ish of sewer line. Okay.
And of that.
And we've only done about a mile of it.
Yep.
So we got 19 miles to go. Sorry, that was my question.
Yeah.
When we decided on the CIPP, I'm assuming we did sort of a cost evaluation of different approaches back when that was.
We did. We also, probably 15 years ago, we used a U-liner, which was steam cured. Mm-hmm. And we did that underneath the sections of the lake just in case they broke, they wouldn't be draining the lake. And we did, I think, three sections of that, but we still have a couple, or two sections, we still have a couple sections that we need to do underneath the lakes. But so we've looked at different options and then different processes, those two mainly.
No, I know one that we've used at my work is just slip lining of Hobos pipe. You can really use anything, but essentially you downsize the diameter slightly, but you improve the manings and this rough smoothness considerably, and so you really don't lose capacity.
Right.
As long as you can get close in the diameter. Part of the reason we've done that is we have a large flows, and so bypassing is kind of a nightmare. So we are able to do that under live flow conditions. We just
What process is it?
It's just a slip lining. So we just basically cut a section of pipe out and then drop the new pipe in, push it, drop it in, and just push it in with the flow running through. And then at the end, we push grout into the annular space.
What kind of product is it?
Hobos pipe is what we've been using. That's a
never heard of it.
Well, they're a centrifugally cast fiberglass. It's arguably one of the better products out there.
Yeah, there's pros and cons with each method and shrinkage and how it installs and the structural strength of each, and so it just depends on what method you want to go with.
Right. And if you have
any separation,
if you have fractured joints, then that could also
work.
You'd have to have no problems with roots or anything.
You can't bridge that like you can with anyway, you guys camera it and find out if it's functional, and you do, okay. I mean, it seems like a good method, but I like that we can bridge some of the gaps and stuff that we have if we have them more cammering. And
another option to include in the tool bag.
Sure. Are there any additional questions on the wastewater planning program survey?
Just one, sorry. Because I'm trying to learn, where can I find the emergency response plan, just so that I know what it is? Is it?
I can get it for you.
Can you? Thank you. Just curious.
Did you have anything else highlighted, Brian, that you wanted to cover?
I did have one other, I can't find it. And it's more just, because it does talk a little somewhere about disposal, solids disposal. And I read somewhere that we, have we never dredged the lagoon? We've never had to dredge the lagoons?
We haven't done it in probably the early 80s. The first two primary cells were dredged. But our sludge was probably about less than 6 to 7 inches. We had them sludge judged last year, and they got halfway through the pond and said, we don't need to continue this anymore.
That's awesome. Okay.
So we're good for now. Good for now. So we've
concerned for quite some time. Yeah. Okay. Do we anticipate that the sludge building up faster if we're adding alum to it?
He doesn't seem to think so.
Yeah, we went through that question and answer process with Lenna. If there is any kind of dredging, it'll probably be in that localized zone that's baffled, but it's intended to disperse throughout the cells 2 and 3. And they didn't identify that as any concern that would add maintenance costs to our. We did ask them specifically, want to identify that as a possible maintenance cost, and he said that's not going to be substantial or even marginal compared to what we have now.
I think the state even asked that question.
Yeah, I think they did too.
That's all the questions I have.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the 2025 Municipal Wastewater Planning Program Survey.
I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item number 4 on the agenda is review 2026 legislative bills, House Bill 1960, 501, 489, and Senate Bill 46 and 250.
Ryan. Sent an email asking about these bills and wanted to chat a little bit about them. Did you have anything specific, Brian, that you wanted to cover in any of those bills that you identified here?
Really, after reading through what you sent, I was only marginally familiar with them to begin with, but
okay.
I was just kind of thinking about making sure we're all aware of anything that's going to affect the district. So,
okay.
It looks like there's not too much other than maybe some design standard changes for stormwater retention.
What was your thoughts, Brendan, when you read that?
Well, they're always written in like code, and you can't really glean out what it really means legally.
Decipher what they want.
But what I got from it is two things. The first was if retention systems, retention means that the stormwater is fully impounded and it stays on the site. And that's not uncommon in most municipalities, including Stansbury Park. This would make that very frowned upon. And actually, it would be against the law without a justification of why you don't have another option or if there's a limiting capacity. So they want you, what LID volume is it's a low impact design process that it requires the developer to put into place a retention that stays on the site at all times. It's not very large volume, but it keeps some of it on site. I don't know that I've ever really understood why, but this bill eliminates that. It says do not do that. You can't do that. Secondly, it doesn't prohibit, but it causes you to justify why you have full retention on the site. So if there's not a storm drain in the road to connect to, that would be one justification. But if there is, that would then become against the law to retain it. You have to discharge it.
The intent is to get water to the Great Salt Lake. So they don't want you to keep water here on site if it can pass through and hit the drainage down there. That's really their intent. They want to get more water in the Great Salt Lake.
So it will change some pretty much statewide policies that have been in place, particularly the low impact design calculation volume requirement, which is, it'll go back to the way that it used to be, pretty much.
About 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it looks like it some of it is effective in May, and some of it goes into effect in 2027, in January 2027. I didn't read it carefully enough to understand all the nuances, but essentially what it'll do is it'll eliminate the retention, full retention, unless there's a good reason, and the low impact design will go away, which is not a big thing that we will have to pivot on.
So it doesn't affect the district that much?
It'll affect developers a lot. It'll save them a lot of money, probably. But it won't affect the way we administer plan reviews and policies.
House Bill 19 was is pretty much a cybersecurity bill. And it talks about emergency response plans. Mm-hmm. And the law now is that if we have a cyber attack, somebody attacks our computers, and wants ransomware or anything like that, we're required to call the hotline within 2 hours. If we get the cybersecurity folks involved, they can pretty much reverse anything that they're trying to do. If it goes past 48 hours, there's nothing that they can do. I think last year there were 11 cyber threats, and they were able to resolve all of them without having to pay any ransom or anything like that. So
11 here or
in the state of Utah? Yeah. And so that was that one. House Bill 501, it didn't pass. It was has to do with water suppliers and secondary transfer of real property, things like that. Anyway, we don't need to chat about that one. Let's see. Senate Bill 250 modifies purposes for the water infrastructure restricted account in light of the reduction of money in the water infrastructure restricted account to fund the Great Salt Lake. Modifies the purpose for which account money may be used, so that I don't know that that really affects us. Senate Bill 46. It imposes landscaping requirements related to state and government facilities and makes technical changes, makes technical and conforming changes. So that one looked like it was more of municipalities and water-wise landscaping units and how they're defined.
That's about a 25% reduction in outdoor water use by 2026. Is that? I guess that's for municipalities, though.
A state agency shall reduce the state agency's outdoor water
by 25%.
Yeah, so that's all state government buildings, agencies. And we're already in our water conservation plan, we're already part of this to reduce our water
by consumption. Yeah.
Other than that, I don't have anything else unless there's other questions.
Back on the signs of security, what is our, I guess I'll call it our cyber posture. We're
very well protected.
Okay.
We have dual firewalls, and then my next step is to get a hold of the state agency that does cybersecurity for government agencies. They'll come in. It's totally funded,
mm-hmm.
And so that's the next step is have them come in and do an assessment.
Awesome. I was going to suggest that they can also do penetration testing, basically,
yeah.
Where they try to
track
you, find out where your weaknesses are.
Yeah.
Pretty useful tool to have.
Yeah. Our internet system, our SCADA system is not tied to the internet, so we're offline there. And then again, there's dual systems set up on our firewall now that we already have in place.
Any other items, Brian?
No. I think that's good.
You're good, Judy?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Brian.
Yeah.
Item number 5 is review Tooele County Development Letter Utility Trench Inspection Requirements now placing compaction and testing responsibility and any settling of trenching on SPID.
So we have a franchise agreement with Tooele County allowing our utilities to be in their public right-of-way. And there's been a verbal agreement between the prior roads department personnel that they would be responsible for compaction testing above the pipe zone in the water, sewer, and storm drain trenching. And so they're putting us on notice now that they're no longer going to be responsible for that, and that it's going to be our responsibility, which is fine. We'll just have, not just, but we'll have the contractors start sending all the test results to us, and then we can forward that on to the county or however we want to work with that. One thing that we do need to clarify, in my opinion, with the county is we're fine to accept this moving forward as of today, but if a trench settles from a subdivision from last year because they were doing the compaction testing, that would still be on them. Does that make sense? So just by way of information, wanted to give you a heads up. And I can send them a letter stating that fact so everybody's on the same page moving forward. Does that seem okay to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Does that mean we specify trench backfill?
Yep.
Or they do?
We
so
do. It's
out.
All it's all us.
Okay.
So we have to change our standard details again, which is fine. Yep. So.
Do we have the contractor do their own compaction testing?
No, there's a, well,
we have,
it's a third-party testing unit.
They pay for it, though, yes.
They will pay for it, yeah. There won't be any expense
to us. It's not us to pay for it. We just review it to make for check it for accuracy. Yeah. And then one of Brett's guys, or Brett himself, will be in the field watching as it's completed as well.
So there was out on Schooner Lane, west of the Stansbury Lake, and it's probably a year ago the new roads department manager contacted me and said that we needed to fix the asphalt that settled around the manholes, and there was some settling in the trenches. And I said, no, we weren't responsible for the manhole didn't settle. It was everything around it. The compaction didn't meet the standard. And so from now on, if that happens, then we'll be responsible for that settling. Yeah, so we'll be very diligent to make sure that any compaction efforts are going to meet the standard, so we don't have to go in and redo something.
It's very uncommon, but it's still a possibility that the aggregate base course and the asphalt can still have a problem, even though your compaction tests are good to go. So I guess the important thing is that if there is settling, that you have your
the results,
so you can put the ball back in the county's court. Because just because it fails doesn't mean that it's your responsibility. It's just all I'm saying,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, yeah.
There can be failures in the other two courses. Not usually that's how it happens, but it can happen, right?
Okay. I asked about the third party testing for us. The contractor coordinated third party testing, but we pay for it directly. And they just not really sure why they set it up that way, other than maybe it was save a little bit on their markup.
Yeah, this will all be paid for either by the developer or the contractor. And then they'll send the results to us.
Now, if we're doing our own project on Village Boulevard, we're the developer, we'll pay for the third party inspector directly.
Well,
okay. Probably more like what you're describing that you guys do internally. Those are your projects, so you're paying for it.
Yeah.
So you're not getting the markup. But in this case, these are subdivisions getting done, paid for by a developer. So either the developer pays for them directly or the contractor pays for them. We're on site to make sure that it's completed accurately. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But on our Village Boulevard project, the county has told SPID, no, you're going to pay for the third party testing. We'll have our civil inspector down there and then they'll provide those results to us. What you just described, what you guys do. But that's your guys' project, just like this is our project.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So lines up closer with what you're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that's it, unless you have other questions. Okay.
You good, Judy?
Yes.
Got it. Okay. Item number 6, manager operation report.
I don't have anything to add unless you have questions.
To approve the meeting minutes on February 17th, 2026.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Approve financials and warrants. I saw a few minor changes, but overall it looks, or I shouldn't say changes, additions.
Explain to me the difference between the financials and the warrants, if you don't mind.
The warrants are basically the invoices.
What we need to pay.
What you agree
to
pay.
Yep. So it's accounts payable, and then the financials are both?
Are all of the data that you can see there.
Okay.
The
budgets, our spending, and
yes.
Okay, thank you. I thought so, but I wanted to make sure I was on the right page there.
Yep.
Okay.
I was wondering, is there a way to look at, it has the bank statements at the end, let's see, Mountain America, I guess that's just the checking. I was just wondering if there was a way to sort of visually sort of match, like, okay, this was our, what went out of the bank, and that matches what we're seeing up above
We can give you anything you'd like. We've changed reports over time with very, very detailed information to this, so we can definitely...
I don't think, I mean, I'm not looking for detail. For me, I was just thinking it'd be nice to be able to, as a board, like, sort of connect the dots of, like, you know, this
month. Here's how much we've received this month, and this is how much went out this month, and...
Yeah, to connect, like, what we're showing in the spending, and then, like, what the banking ends in a total for the month, you know, in and out of the bank, just as a way to fulfill our role of, you know...
Checks and balances.
Checks and balances.
I think that's what Jody was doing previously. There was a lot of information there for you, so we can have her...
A way to just summarize,
do that. Why don't you come into the office when you get a minute,
okay,
and we'll have you chat directly to the girls in the office, and we'll figure out a way to get what you want to see.
I wouldn't mind a summarized sheet. They gave us one that gave us everything, and it was like 400
pages long. It's almost too much.
And it's overwhelming a little bit. You get into it, and you're like, and you're trying to compare everything, and it doesn't quite. It's not really a summary, it's just everything.
Everything. Yeah.
And so it's like drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah. I mean, as a board, I think we'd be looking for...
Discrepancies is what you're...
Amount, yeah, does the amount that left the bank match what we are showing that we spent?
Sure.
And does the amount that went into the bank match what we are showing as incoming?
And how are we doing on the budget items, I guess? Are we staying within our budget?
But that's on there. But that's
that is in there.
That's on there. That's that sheet right there.
That's part of it. Sorry, Jake.
Oh, I see right here. You too.
Go to this.
Copy of the budget.
Go to this. It's in the financials.
Okay.
And so you have that page there, and then the next page, the third page, it looks like this.
Yeah.
That one? Mm-hmm. No, this one. One more. This one?
Maybe. It's just smaller, and I can't.
Okay, all right.
So it will give you the, so like on water fees, it'll give you the period actual. So this period, we've collected $75,000 in water fees.
Okay.
Year to date, from January to now, we've collected $176,000. And our budget is, for the whole year, is $2 million.
Okay.
Which, and then it goes unearned, so we're at 8.7% of our overall budget in that one category.
That's exactly, okay, thank you.
That was one thing I was actually wanting to have clarified, is because at the top it says for the 2 months ending in February 28th.
But that's what it is.
Well,
so it's not case, it's not March.
Right, but if it's January and February, wouldn't the period and the year-to-date match?
No, because January would have its own period actual. February has its own period actual. And then year to date combines 2 months.
Right, but I guess when it says for 2 months, that makes it seem like that's the period.
It's January and February, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm not understanding, because that would be the same as year to date. Unless, you're saying that year to date includes March?
No.
No.
So maybe take off 2 months and just say period ending February 28th.
I think that's what.
That's what it's representing.
Yeah, 75 is just for
it's
one.
It's just for February.
Right.
75 is for February. January was the difference between
that's
176.
The total for the two of them, year to date actual.
Yeah.
That's what you're getting hung up on, because then those two should match, because it's the 2 months together is what you're based on how that's
written.
If
the period was actually 2 months, then those would match. But so, I think take the 2 months out. Just for the period. Or even say the one.
And it, so it may have been she had to close the month. I mean, there's lots of things that she has to do at the year end, because you'll remember last month it didn't have that information because the month wasn't closed. But that's what it is. The January and February are included in those, that information.
Okay. Any concerns with the warrants?
No.
I'll soon buy it on, see if we can get some kind of a summary or report.
Sure.
As a board, just connect the dots.
I'll entertain a motion.
I move to approve the warrants for the,
March.
For the warrants for the period, how do I say that?
March 17th, 2026.
But what is, I mean, that's today.
Right. So this is all the bills to date.
Okay.
So if you looked at this, would be off from the one that we received on Friday. It's different by a couple thousand dollars.
Right.
They've highlighted them. One thing we're going to get is next month, we're probably going to see two bills from Rocky Mountain Power because we didn't get them in time for this meeting.
Gotcha.
So we're going to see a little bit of a difference there. I didn't see them. I saw Questar Gases, but I didn't see Rocky Mountain Power's in here. So if we compare that to what we received, it's different by a couple thousand dollars because of these small items that were added to it. But it's, if we go off what we had there, we'd be saying March 13th, whenever we received the packet, for whatever that total is. But we have a new packet here with the items that we received Monday prior to our meeting. They printed them off today for us.
Okay.
So
I'll move that we approve the warrants dated March 17th, 2026.
You can stay in now.
For the amount of $41,382.90.
We also need to approve the financials as well.
Oh, and the financials. That's receiving everything. Financials and warrants.
Yeah.
And I'll move to approve the financials as well.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Any petitions, communication, and public comment?
No.
Is there any other additional items the board would like to discuss that we haven't discussed yet?
I guess I had a question regarding the Brett and I talked briefly down at the Rural Water Conference, and I guess I was just kind of wanting to gently pump the brakes on this upgrade, just to make sure we're on the right track, the most economical track for us.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Yeah, sorry, the fan just kicked on, now I gotta... I mentioned that we have a resident within our district that also works for a consulting firm that specializes in wastewater treatment, and that in talking to him, he'd be interested in just reviewing where we're at and just providing another set of eyes to kind of say, yeah, you're on the right track, or, you know, or have you looked at this? Emailed me and said, go ahead and send this to him. I haven't heard back. I think I only sent it relatively recently. So anyway, just wanting to measure twice and cut once. I mentioned that before. One idea that I wanted to ask about whether or not we looked into it is potentially moving our outfall location. And the reason I ask that is because the North Davis Sewer District actually did that on a much larger scale, where they actually moved their outfall, they built a pipeline and moved their outfall out into Gilbert Bay and were able to get out of the phosphorus and pink ammonia as well requirements by doing that. And I was thinking about what that would require for us to do. Anyway, I was just curious if that came up in the alternatives we were looking at.
We didn't look at that option specifically. I heard about that down at the Rural Water Conference from our permit writer. We were trying to secure the property from Sitla, where our water sits. Mm-hmm. And we were asking to put a fence around it so we could control it. That would also get us around that. But I will look into that further with our permit writer to see if we can possibly pipe it to that same area. But so the problem that we've got is, I don't know what the difference with Gilbert Bay is or whatever North Davis is doing, but our water still ends up in that basin the public still has access to. So I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah, well, with Gilbert Bay being hypersaline, essentially you won't have the algal blooms occurring. And so they don't have the same water quality criteria for the Great Salt Lake, other than freshwater locations like where our discharge is ending up now, because it's separated from the lake by that causeway. So we would have to pipe it past the railroad
and
into Gilbert Bay.
Oh, yeah, okay.
In order to achieve that. And I was just doing some back of the envelope things with that, and it's about 2 miles roughly from our current outfall.
Mm-hmm.
But you would only need probably a 15-inch pipe for like 3.5 MGD if you're pumping it.
Mm-hmm.
And the estimated power was going to be 60 horsepower, like less than our aeration. You do have to deal with the railroad and UDOT, which takes time. But I mean, just thinking about it conceptually, potentially like directional drill.
And that's all that they would allow. Rock Mountain Power, directional bore.
The railroad.
Railroad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably what they
with a steel say. Casing.
Right.
That's all they'll allow. I'm doing one right now.
Yeah.
But that still might be a feasible option, to your point. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
So there were two, we did look into this land use application a little bit. So we would either need, no matter where it goes, we either have to classify the land use application, that's probably not the right word, is either a groundwater discharge permit, or we have to contain it in a lagoon. And that's when we talked about putting it in the Sitla area, or in Moore's property, we looked at getting property there. In other words, so that we can eliminate a discharge to another water body. And the two ways we can do that, according to the state, is through a groundwater discharge permit, which brings with it a process, and we're in the middle of one right now to monitor groundwater, mm-hmm. look at the background constituents and their concentrations, and then also determine whether that groundwater is a discharge and what the rate of that is. And then the second option is to not do a groundwater discharge permit, but do constructed lagoons. And we did look at that option as well, and came to did some calculations and determined that 3.5 million gallons a day, the size of the lagoons would overtake in cost what we're doing now. And we factored in some land costs. So we haven't gone, I mean, we haven't gone through full regulatory implications, but we have explored full containment in some manner on various lands.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. No, that makes sense. That's assuming we're sort of getting rid of the discharge. But I think discharging to the Great Salt Lake would potentially get us out of some of the
phosphorus and ammonia limits.
Some of the parameters that are...
Because we're not driving. Discharging to a freshwater source, exactly. The high saline mm-hmm. source of the Great Salt Lake. That's the difference that you're...
Yeah.
By piping it, we're not discharging to an ephemeral class, whatever...
Class 3 seawater.
Yeah, under the anti-degradation
right.
Parameters.
Yeah. So by being in a sealed pipe, it's...
That would eliminate that part, but it would... We'd have to deal with the land acquisition versus lease versus full containment or groundwater discharge permit.
Yeah, you basically need a pretty long easement through those lands. And then you'd have to deal with going under UDOT and the railroad, which is always a little bit painful, but
it can be done.
It can be done.
I'll reach out to our permit writer, see what he says. Because that's one of the things we were trying to get away with was the phosphorus and ammonia treatment, because it's expensive.
Yeah. So, and the chemicals that you sort of sign up for life once you start using that for the phosphorus, it's hard to know what those costs are going to look like in the future.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was just an idea that I was kind of mulling about.
Well, and that's good that you brought that up, because the first I heard about it is down at the conference. Dan Griffin is our permit writer. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know Dan.
I do.
He was talking about it. I'm like, wait a minute. We need to look into that.
Yeah.
So.
North David, they spent, I mean, theirs was like a 60-inch pipe or something, so they spent a pretty good amount of money to, I think they went out several miles.
And with the amount of water they went in the Great Salt Lake, it might be a good
And that's the other thing is that, you know, from a PR perspective, it also sort of is like, this is something we can benefit the Great Salt Lake, putting our water here.
The Box Elder guy needs
not
to
the water they're looking
to
for,
the DEQ. The guy that sponsored this bill needs to have a conversation with the
not really the water they're looking for.
Laden with sours.
Right, exactly. It's not really their water looking for, Brian, but I get what you're saying. They want the storm water to make it there.
The brine stream industry wants the nutrients. So.
Yeah. So you're right.
The ammonia and phosphorus is actually good for that industry.
Okay, well,
any other items?
No, that was kind of the one that I was just thinking about.
Okay.
Just thanks for being patient with my
ignorance.
So, thank you.
No problem.
Well, I motion to adjourn this meeting.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Thanks, everybody.
Meeting is adjourned at 5:10 p.m.